Welcome, Register Readers!
It's episode 17 of Open Season. This is your host, Ashley Vance. And as always, we've got Matt Acey from El Fresco and Dave Rosenberg, the boss of Mule Source, on the line. And joining us this week is Jim Zemlin, Executive Director of the Linux Foundation. Jim, thanks for popping on.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Thanks for not being able to use Skype.
Yeah, Jim's on a landline. This is what happens.
I'm
when
an analog guy.
It's too expensive for him.
Doesn't run on Linux. What's the problem?
You know, last time I tried to use Skype, they demanded I pay in pounds, and with the exchange rate the way it is these days, I refuse to use it.
Fair enough.
I thought we have to start the show with a non open source issue, which is did you guys see this? Broadcom CEO, the ex-CEO of Broadcom, Henry, is it Nicholas?
Nicholas?
Awesome. Big Nick?
Awesome.
Couldn't be.
He had a harem apparently built under his home. Like, he lived on a mountain and had this slew of mazes that would lead to prostitutes' lairs or whatever, live-in prostitutes.
No, this is pretty awesome. These charges have been ongoing for like almost a year, but the feds officially indicted him yesterday, and he had a prostitute lair allegedly, and also an alleged kind of drug lair. But my favorite part that we found in the indictment was that he was on his private plane, I think going from LA to Las Vegas, and they smoked so much weed in the plane that the pilot had to put on an oxygen mask so that he didn't get a contact high from all the smoke coming in.
I just can't wait till this story's about me.
Was this a Ken Starr situation where they went in for the stock option backdating and then discovered all these unsavory things?
Well, it was weird because he was already in trouble for the stock option backdating, but then one of his former aides is the one who, he was like his bodyguard, and he sued him last year claiming that, you know, he was this really abusive boss, but for some reason the guy stayed on for like 9 years, and then all of a sudden he became offended by being dosed with ecstasy and punched in the face and things like that. And then it seems like the feds have just piggybacked on these charges to kind of make their case a little stronger. But I mean, this guy has like $2 billion.
One more.
Yeah.
Could we add a claim? They need to open source their drivers for their wireless that needs to happen.
I'm sure that's high on his priority list.
Maybe he'll do that while he's in jail.
but he's been gone for a while, right?
Yeah.
Broadcom actually had a group. I mean, I worked with them back in 2000 on open source related things because they were looking at using Linio, the company I was with at the time. But you'd think that they would get it a little bit more, but I think they're like SAP. They don't really see much need to do anything with open source.
Well, like all these guys, like Adaptec and all the people kind of further down on the hardware stack, I mean, all their money comes from kind of having their proprietary little locks, right? Because I know Sun's been talking a lot about how you can take bits and pieces of Solaris, which is open source now, and kind of make your own RAID controller, but you know, if you turn to like Adaptec, you're paying thousands of dollars for that. It's kind of weird. There doesn't seem to be like a real strong open source push there.
Yeah, they're making a mint off of those proprietary wireless card drivers. I'm not seeing the economics there, but they.
Well, that's the thing. Like
someday though,
like these storage controllers haven't dropped in price like ever, and there's just no reason for it really, because I mean the hardware problem's kind of been solved. But anyway, so there you go. He's the all-star CEO.
Well, fortunately, we didn't have to solve it that way. They're being sent to prison, alternatively.
Right. Yeah, but I don't know. So that should make for some... I wish the trial was up here so that I could go
hear
to...
Hear that, Microsoft? Start open sourcing things. Prison for you, too.
Yes.
Did you guys see this story in the Wall Street Journal? Rob Guth actually almost wrote like a negative story about Microsoft on Ballmer and Gates.
It wasn't even almost negative. It was like negative for the headline, and then the rest of it was. But then Bill Gates said, "Oh, I better put down my pride a little bit and make way for Steve."
That was the
whole thing.
That was the best part of it. Like I went, I'm like, "There's no way Rob Guth wrote a mean story." And then you get to like paragraph three, and then you find out that their fight was just a totally redeeming
quality. And there's all sorts of tears welling up all throughout the article. Steve Ballmer's tears well up. Like, I didn't even know he knew he had tears, but he apparently they like well up at a moment's notice.
It was just, I heard a funny Bill Gates story just yesterday, as a matter of fact, from somebody who was at the D conference, or All Things Demonic, whatever it's called.
Right.
And the woman, not the Google girlfriend, but the other one from 23andMe, was going on some kind of rampage about how autism is because we're giving kids vaccines. And Jim and Ashley, you both have kids on the way, so get them vaccinated. But this woman was just like going on and on and on. She happened to be sitting at the same table as Bill Gates, who then apparently just lambasted her, and it got real uncomfortable as he was talking to her about how they'd immunized, you know, 18 million children in Africa, not a single one have autism.
Wait, where'd you
and all these other gut things?
You read this or you heard this from someone?
No, I got this from somebody who was sitting at the table.
Man, that does sound pretty serious.
I believe that.
And Gates just went just ballistic on this woman who had the audacity to, you know, start making all these claims, and he started just killing her with the numbers from the Gates Foundation, and you know, the fact that they have 80 people, like 80 global experts working on vaccines full time as part of the foundation.
It turns out it's hard to give $40 billion away, and when Warren Buffett matches you, it's even harder.
So yep.
Pretty big staff.
So they're doing all this crazy research, and it got real uncomfortable because this is like his thing, is that you've got to, you know, we have to do these vaccinations and whatever else, especially in the you know, emerging nations.
That's Sergey's wife, though, right? The one who's behind 23andMe?
It is, but this wasn't the one. There's two of them, apparently. And it was the other one. So maybe that was part of the frustration, but apparently it got uncomfortable.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a sore subject for folks, that the whole autism being caused by vaccination debate is a sore subject. By the way, our girl did arrive.
Ah, congratulations.
Okay. Thank you.
Congratulations.
What's the name?
Nisha. Nisha Lena Zemlin.
Wow, very nice.
Misha with
an Indian name. My wife is East Indian, and so we have an Indian name, and then we have a Scandinavian middle name, and then my last name.
You know, you could just drop that kid off at Matt's house. They just take babies left and right over there. That's what we did with Kiki. So
I don't know how you do it, Matt.
She lives in Utah.
That's what you were invited to do, Dave. You never took me up.
It's going to happen, my friend. So, it's all timing.
Jim, before we get too far in the show notes, I see somebody has posed the question as to whether the Linux Foundation is needed.
No. Let me. That's my question. Let me ask it in a. I'm not talking bad about the foundation. It's just I saw this post this morning about the 100 Linux migrations, and I mean everybody uses Linux, and so I guess my real question is, what does the Linux Foundation do? Is it an advocacy group for people to use Linux? Because that seems to be happening. At some point, we're going to have a big battle with Microsoft, but I don't think we're really having it. Yeah, I think it's mostly Unix that's getting cannibalized by Linux.
So, well, you know, first of all, the foundations like this are going to exist as long as people participate in them and there are members who support it. And to that degree, you know, obviously it is needed because people are participating in. And, you know, from the advocacy point of view, which is one of the things that we do, to your point, we're kicking butt. Linux is being used everywhere, and I'd like to take... not the majority of the credit, but like 50-50, you know, half us, half everyone else. But there are sort of, you know, in terms of what a foundation like this does, you know, there are roles that we play in providing a home for Linus Torvalds, to which you could reply, you know, the guy can get a job anywhere he wants. The point is that he has a place where he doesn't work for any particular vendor that's seen as a competitor to another that really enables the Linux development process to work smoothly and efficiently. So, you know, not broke, don't fix it kind of thing. You know, what he's doing and where he works really works effectively right now. And, you know, somebody has to help manage the Linux trademark, which is owned by Linus Torvalds and held in trust by the foundation. So that's another role that we play. Standardization is something that is important, you know, you can sort of debate what degree of standardization Linux requires, but certainly the work we do around the Linux standard base at minimum keeps sort of the rails on the track. Ideally, it would be something that would make it easier for developers to target the Linux platform across multiple versions of the Linux operating system. We have legal forums that our members participate in to discuss issues around open source licensing and governance that they find useful. They find it useful to gather with their peers and talk about issues related to legal topics of the day in an environment that's antitrust free, because, you know, obviously we're a foundation, and that's something that people can do in an unfettered way. And then we, you know, host a variety of forums for people to collaborate on various technical work that nobody else wants to do. You know, we have an open printing project that, you know, sort of does work, the unglamorous work of, you know, allowing printer developers to write drivers to the Linux, for the Linux platform, I should say, and provides an infrastructure so that when you plug in a printer on Linux, the driver, the printer itself is recognized. A driver is downloaded from openprinting.org, which is linuxprinting.org, which is a site we host, and that all works. You know, we do that around bringing Linux into IPv6 compliance. We often work with our member companies to identify a particular project that they don't all want to do individually. They'd like to find a place to collectively go and do that work, and we provide that forum for them. Now, again, you could argue that any other forum could go and supply that, but people find it useful to do that here at the Linux Foundation, and we provide pretty good service with pretty low overhead, so we're happy to do it. I think that it's something that is still needed, and certainly if challenges come before the platform, we will work on behalf of our members to fight those things.
Take that,
what about Matt. What about the airplane and the Coke and whatever? Isn't that a
yes, exactly. We're I wish.
Yeah, who was on that plane with Nick, with the CEO of Broadcom?
Yes,
wasn't it Andrew Morton? Wasn't it in fact Andrew Morton? Oh, he's at Google now, so we don't support him.
Exactly. Broadcom is not a member of the Linux Foundation.
You thought enough ganja would get them there, but apparently not.
Says to me, you've made a bad choice. Then you got to get them in there because they are the party group.
Actually, you know, you meant to mention Broadcom. I'll give you yet another example of where foundations like this are reasonably useful. So device support on Linux is something that everybody wants to see improved. We have a program where we work with the kernel community, educating device manufacturers in Taipei, in Japan, and in places like Korea and here in the U.S. on the model of, you know, bringing device support into the mainline kernel. We, you know, show them, okay, here's the Windows model, and you can build proprietary blobs independent of Microsoft because you have a stable API. Here's the Linux model. You know, you have to open source your driver, get it integrated into the mainline kernel. You know, each of them have advantages and disadvantages. The advantage on the Linux side is that, you know, the support costs on an ongoing basis are very low. They're more technically efficient because you're able to work with the actual code of the kernel itself and developing your drivers. They're maintained by folks over time who do that on a volunteer basis. Greg Crow Hartman has 300 volunteers that if you give them your device, give them the spec, they'll go write this thing for you at no cost. So we work with dozens and dozens of device manufacturers all over the world to get better device support on Linux. That's something that we do on behalf of all of our members, Red Hat, Novell, IBM, HP, NEC, Fujitsu, Hitachi. It's of the high value to all those folks. And so that's just an example of where, you know, a foundation does, I don't want to describe it as janitorial work, but it's some of the more less glamorous work of, you know, or smoothing some of the edges of the platform collectively with all of our members.
All right, that's the end of that.
Enough of that infomercial. Yeah. Let's
you guys brought it up.
Did you accuse us of
early
too much?
On a Friday morning to question?
Early? It's 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock. Didn't you accuse us of a kibitzing and too much discussion at one
point? You're right. He did.
I had to listen to you for like an hour. Too much kibitzing.
He totally did.
At the cold dinner that you and I were at.
So I have a question about two of your members.
Oh, Jesus.
And actually, this is probably not directed at Jim, because I don't think Jim is allowed to criticize the hand that feeds. But is it just me, or has Red Hat just kind of become really quiet? And I mean, they don't seem to be. Here's my thing. I thought that Red Hat was positioned really well to become the leader of the quote unquote free world and be the hub of the open source commercial ecosystem. RHX was a step in that direction, and they've just been really quiet. And I don't know if that's the disappearance of Zulik, or if there's just they're just like kind of like what I was going for earlier, Jim, with maybe Linux is just so established that Red Hat just keeps chugging away, keeps having good quarters. Novell is now having increasingly good quarters based on their Linux business.
I think it has to do with the change in leadership that, you know, Jim Whitehurst came in early this year. You know, it takes him, you know, 3 to 6 months to sort of feel out the organization. I mean, from an operations perspective, Red Hat is just a machine. They're highly effective at what they do. They're just great engineers. They really run a tight ship over there. So, you know, I mean, it's obvious that they continue to chug along. But, you know, I think it takes a while for a CEO to come in, understand the culture, understand the company, understand the industry, and then create his vision. They have their Red Hat summit coming up here in 2 weeks in Boston, so I'm looking forward to hearing from Jim and other folks on the Red Hat team to hear a vision from the organization, because I do agree they have been fairly silent.
How much
I heard a word on the street is that the Red Hat Exchange thing is dead or dying. What do you know about that, Jim Zemlin?
This is their application ecosystem.
Yeah, so that means you know nothing.
What do you know, Matt? Yeah, is that true?
Let me name a few of their partners there. Alfresco, Mule.
Ooh, well, that'll have, well, I don't know if it'll have a major impact, but Matt has spoken highly of it. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, my take is that they're going to focus more on the core Linux business, which then I would really expect them to step up into the foundation over there and get their heads back in the game.
Yeah, well, I think, I can't comment on RHX, but I do think that, I think that Dave's right. And it means that I think we're going to hear a lot less from Red Hat, which I think is bad for the industry. I think we need somebody to step up and be the open source hub. And I thought it was going to be Red Hat. I don't think it's going to be Red Hat anymore. I thought maybe it'd be Sun, and it could well be. I know Jim has some complaints about Sun with Solaris, and you know, to a large extent, I share those. But we need, I think we need somebody. I just don't believe that open source is this. I do believe it's a global force. I don't think it's a global commercial force that's going to be able to topple Microsoft or anything without a little bit of centralized help. And again, I thought that was going to be Red Hat. They started organizing meetings where they pulled in all of the open source startups, and then it just died. And it actually died well before Jim got there. I'm not sure how much I worry about it. Yeah. Sorry, not you, Jim. Jim Whitehurst. I'm not sure how much I worry about it, but I do worry about it. And to Novell's credit, Novell is out actively beating the pavement, talking with the same open source companies that are working or were working with Red Hat. And you know, it could be that Novell ends up filling that void. Novell doesn't have a great track record of operational excellence in the way that I think Red Hat has, or at least has been thought to have, but you know, maybe Novell fills that gap. But they're looking a lot better than they were even 6 months ago.
I think a lot of people in the open source world will disagree with Novell's tactics. But if you look at since Ron Hovsepian took over the organization, it's hard to argue with the results. I mean, he's growing that Linux business. A double-digit growth. I think they were up 30% last quarter. He's, you know, sort of stopped the bleeding in their legacy businesses. He's making some smart acquisitions around systems management and virtualization management that seem to be paying off for him. So it's hard to argue that he hasn't had an impact, at least on the financial success of the organization, as evident by their last earnings call. You know, I think from in terms of who is the open source visionary, who sort of leads the way of projecting inevitability of open source, which is in a lot of ways how people make bets on platforms, right? It's an implicit futures contract because you know that, you know, 5-10 years from now, you're still going to have to support, you know, Windows or Unix or Linux. I do think you'll see Jim Whitehurst get more comfortable in his role, start to play that role. Ron Hovsepian, I think, can do a good job there, but he's focused on making sure that operationally Novell is an effective business, and I think he's doing a terrific job there. So,
yeah, but if you look at both companies, Jim, and maybe this is where Linux Foundation steps in. If you look at both companies, they both are now headed by operations guys, not by visionaries. Zulik was a visionary. Chris Stone before Hovsepian, before Messman, was a visionary. we've got the two top Linux vendors that are basically out just executing. Yep. And there, I think there's a leadership void. And you look at the CTOs of the company, Brian Stevens at Red Hat, I think, is fantastic. But either because he's not allowed to or for whatever reason, you don't hear him out there making bold predictions about Linux or where open source is going. You certainly don't have that at Novell. Jeff Jaffe's a nice guy, but he's not out there proclaiming the future of open source either. And, you know, maybe we don't need that. Maybe we've grown up to the point where we don't need anybody to do anything except execute against what's already there. But
yeah, I mean, that's obviously working. I think it's worth, and we obviously are working with our members to play a role where we're witnessing, what you're seeing is sort of a maturation in the enterprise market of Linux and a lot of open source technology. But the point I make to people about Linux in particular when I travel around the world is, you know, this is seeing tremendous growth in embedded systems. You're seeing in the mobile industry, you know, massive growth and adoption of the Linux platform. And, you know, not because any single visionary has proclaimed that Linux is better than the other option out there, but because it's, you know, pragmatic. It's, you know, it's a better time to market advantage. It's got all the flexibility that these device makers need. The interesting thing about that is when you see growth across all these aspects of computing from a single platform, embedded, mobile, you know, supercomputing, server side, even on the client side, we're seeing growth, small growth on the desktop, you get this incredible cross-pollination, you know, a longer battery life goal for somebody working on Linux at Motorola translates into lower power consumption at a data center. And so that type of development is really going to impact all aspects of computing. And I don't think people really realize the profound impact that'll have on platform technology like Linux. So
hey, Jim,
that message needs to get out there. I hope we can see it more.
How much do you guys pay Torvalds over there?
How much do we pay?
$1.
Yes.
He's like Jerry Yang.
No, do you guys have to disclose that? You're like a non-profit, right?
I believe that the only thing we disclose is my compensation. So you can.
Oh, I'm going to look that up right now.
I don't think it's actually there yet because we just completed. I just started at the Linux Foundation.
Oh, Linux Foundation. So that's what, like 27.5.
You would see Stuart Cohen's.
I'm going to
compensation.
Who's
we have
Dave? Once you get that, we're going to, depending on what the answer is, we're going to have him by lunch next time.
No question.
Who's your, who are the biggest?
I can confidently say you might actually feel sorry for me.
who are the biggest contributors to the Linux Foundation as far as money goes?
I mean, the people who have the largest strategic investment in the platform, IBM, Hewlett Packard, Intel.
What about Google? Are they part of the crew?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're,
what do they give you, like $2?
No, they're a huge supporter of the Foundation.
Right.
So they tend to support us in both monetary ways. They're a member. They pay the membership due, which is generous. But they also hosted our last collaboration summit in the Bay Area, which brought hundreds of developers into their campus to talk about issues that impact Linux. They help us with funding folks to help make kernel documentation better. They're huge supporters. They're really good guys.
You know who Google doesn't support, and that's Open Season, because those bastards, Chris DiBona and Jeremy Allison, refused to come on the show.
No, Jeremy didn't refuse.
Jeremy,
he wasn't allowed to go on the show by the PR minions.
You can tell this story, Ashley, because I'm not getting in trouble for this one.
Well, I mean, that's what happened. Jeremy, we asked him to come on. He's kind of a friend of the Register, at least. I mean,
I know him too.
Yeah. And, but the PR guys wouldn't let him go on. And then Chris DiBona, this was just like last week. I didn't even tell you guys because one of his PR guys was trying to get him on the show. And he said he would prefer not to be doing that. So we're making friends everywhere.
Hey. Well, so let's talk about making friends. Why is Matt sucking up to Mark Fleury and yet at the same time saying that Enterprise DB sucks?
I didn't say Enterprise DB sucks.
When were you?
Yeah, you told me that I was wrong for being happy for Enterprise DB for scoring the Red Hat guy. Why do you hate so much, Matt?
I think it's great that they scored Ed. I mean, that's a fantastic coup. What I said is I didn't understand it because I mean, let's be frank, the public persona, the reputation, and probably the revenue behind it doesn't seem to justify it to me. I mean, if I were running North American sales for Red Hat, I would be probably, and with all due respect to EnterpriseDB, it just hasn't had the cachet that, say, MuleSource has or SugarCRM or something like that. So, I mean, that's where I would have gone if I would have been Ed. So,
wow, I can hire Ed, you think?
Thanks for putting me on the spot. But I've come to really like Mark. I think the bigger question, and I don't get anything from blowing up Mark's skirt except for maybe funding for my next venture. I think the bigger, go back to Google. Has Google changed, or is it just they had their Google I.O. conference, and so we all said nice things about them, and they said nice things about other people, and actually recognized that other people existed for a few weeks. Has Google changed, or is it just, did I just get caught up in the moment? Because they did seem to be doing, this Mac stuff that they're doing is actually pretty cool. I've installed some of the programs. They're all open source. Google I.O., my wife tells me, was quite good. I wasn't able ultimately to make it out for it, but I think the developer focus at Google is a net positive for the industry. I don't know. I just don't know if it'll last. Any other thoughts on that? Is Google really interested in developers and really interested in open source?
No.
Yeah, I think they did the world a favor in the wireless auction by demanding that, by participating, they invoked much more open wireless infrastructure out there. I think the work they're doing with Android is a net positive in terms of breaking down a lot of walled gardens that we see in the country. So that's one example.
Yeah, I think it's hard to find out why it's not a positive. You know, they don't do things that are always, you know, free for the world to the extent that they don't benefit from it. So I don't know. My guess is that there's something in here that they'll score from it. I mean, what? It's true. Same thing goes for Matt.
They're a for-profit entity, publicly traded.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're gonna do what they need to do. But Matt and I were also talking about the about Facebook, mm-hmm. and whether or not the whole thing around that Facebook open platform had any real benefits or not.
What's the deal with that? Can you explain what's going on?
Well, so basically, Facebook open sourced their developer platform using the CPAL license, which has the badgeware license, and I actually think it was a good move. And Matt, what's your take on it?
No, but we both think it's a good and bad move for the exact same reason. You think it's a good move because it protected them against open source. I think it's a good move, a bad move because it protected them against open source. So. I mean, let's face it, if they wanted, and this goes for not just for Facebook, but for everybody, if they really wanted tons of outside contributions, they'd probably go, with all due respect to Linux, they'd probably go with Apache. Or if they just wanted people to freely use it and make the world a better place, they'd probably go with an Apache-style license. The reality is, they, like Google, are a for-profit company, and they needed some license that would protect them on the web, and so they'd either have CPAL, Larry Rosen's OSL, open source license, I think, or something like that. It has kind of a bland name, or AGPL. And they chose what I think is probably the least likely to get any outside development,
I don't understand. Why do you think that? Because if you realize that there are at this point, there's probably 100 companies that have been funded to build Facebook apps that have no ability to use the thing, and they're using the brand anyway. My point is that they're putting software in people's hands that they get to retain their brand. There's probably cachet being associated with that Facebook developer platform. It's a win-win. They're going to get developers no matter what, and this just kind of helps everybody, I think.
I don't agree, because if you're writing an application to work with Facebook, Facebook's already got the brand. I mean, this isn't writing applications for Facebook. I mean, they could just open their APIs as they have been doing, and that gets the same benefit. I think the access to the source code itself, I'm not sure how much that helps, and certainly having their logo slapped on your app when it's only running within Facebook. Who cares about that?
It's not only running within Facebook. This is if you and I decide we're going to go start a new widget company and we want to use the Facebook developer platform, we would have to have – and the attribution is minimal. It's not like it's slapped on every page. It's in the about or the help section. It's not like this giant galling thing. And so it's basically, if we wanted to go build an app and we wanted to sort of have some sort of something that I actually think people use this as a branding benefit. It's like Intel Inside.
Yeah, you keep believing that.
Well, I just don't see how you think that. So they have no interest in giving, in being completely open and free and giving stuff out to the community. And so what they sort of did what they could to get stuff out there, right, while still retaining the brand imprint and opening up without actually being open. I mean, I think that's basically what it is, right?
No, exactly. And I just think they would have, if they were sincere in wanting outside development, then they would have gone with AGPL or something like that.
But why though? Because AGPL has all the GPL requirements associated with it. This still lets people do things, and all it says, all they have to do is put something in the help section saying that this is based on the Facebook platform. It's really not intrusive.
Do you guys fight like this when you're? This is what happens when you don't drink beer. This is what you end up.
Look, Matt and I do push-up contests now.
Then you end up
having that one.
C-Pal sparring.
We had a push-up contest in my office a few months ago, and I won against our marketing manager. 50.
Good Lord.
I just bought the perfect push-up machine.
Oh, yeah? How's that working out for you? Are you a giant now?
Well, it was developed by, you know, Navy SEALs, and
I think I've seen this commercial. Yeah. No, I bet you're looking good then.
Developed by Navy SEALs. I have seen that commercial. They show it between all the soccer games. That after the Cialis commercials.
You know what? When I'm doing
neither one has worked.
Feeding, I literally just am on QVC buying stuff left and right.
So see, they're paying you too much over at the foundation.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Well, did you buy it on eBay?
$994 next year. There you go.
maybe you bought it on eBay, and Nick Carr probably has something against that.
Yeah, well, speaking of Nick Carr and speaking of stupidity, just a shout-out to anyone who doesn't get The Atlantic. You should definitely – well, A, it's kind of been worthless for the past few years because every article is about Iraq, but – it finally got back to its roots and started writing interesting commentary again. And Nick Carr has the cover story, Is Google Making Us Stupid? And it's kind of a riff on his The Big Switch book that he just wrote. But it's fantastic. I mean, it really, really is insightful. And it got me thinking, actually motivated me to do something. I've made a commitment that I'm going to read an hour every single day. Just because I find, like he says anecdotally in his thing, that I can't...
This is the no beer thing again, Ashley.
This the no what?
No beer thing again.
No, I mean, Matt's on
how do you spend your time? People are now, blogs were too long, so now they Twitter.
Our brains are fading away as we lose our attention span. Well, yeah.
If you Google memory loss, there's a lot of solutions that you can find there. Natural remedies.
Jim, when are you going to get Microsoft to open source Windows? We've all read it in the journal. We know that this is your real deal. When are you going to make it happen?
Well, as soon as they run out of their cash reserves, that's likely to happen.
Jim, the line for me is really getting crappy, so I just want to thank you very much for coming on the show. I think we're going to have to wrap it up.
No problem.
To all our Register readers and listeners, thank you as always for tuning in, and you can send me email to ashley.vance@theregister.co.uk or leave your comments in the comments section. And with that, thanks again to Jim and Matt and Dave, and we'll see you guys again in a week or two.